his children, you know, Quincy, Javion, Tanjanika, Tyson, and Gianna, and his three-year-old granddaughter, Journey. We all need prayer, but if I am honest about it, we are more concerned about his children and his grandchildren. So I ask that you pray for us as we go along this marathon to make sure that justice is served on George's behalf, or Perry as we call him. I ask that you pray for us and especially for their children. Thank you.
How y'all doing? I am Rodney Floyd, youngest brother of George Floyd. And my older brother PJ was talking about childhood memories and how we grew up. And I would like to start where he left off. We didn't have much growing up, but all that great stuff how we dried and washed our clothes, that was just ingenuity. And I mean, hey, we worked what we had, but didn't have much, but we had a house full of love. And I mean, I appreciate the love of everyone in here in the state of Minneapolis. Y'all adopted my brother and showed him so much love. And we feel that love in your city and thankfully everybody and plus around the world. It's a beautiful thing, this great love we're receiving. And George Floyd is receiving because he would love it. I wish he was here in the presence in the flesh to see it, because all this great unity, you would bring in the tears like it's bringing us. But she had fun, me and my brother, Big Floyd, as y'all know. Oh, cooking-wise, he would make me, honestly, him and the other brothers, three gentlemen my brother mentioned grew up in our household. They would say, "Libro, you make the best grilled cheese. Can you please go make us one?" And I mean, if I tell y'all as a little 6 or 7 year old kid, I did that numerous times. I realized as I got older, y'all just using me. But you know what? But, you know, I was just happy to be doing it. But my big brother, I mean, great guy, great gentleman, great man. And as a child, without no father figure, he was a big brother. But I didn't see the little stuff that he was throwing out. He was doing the best he can. And the mistakes he made. And I, watching them, following him, correcting myself as a grown man, as a teenager growing up. And, you know, learning from him how to be a man and everything he instilled us and taught us, he was doing him, but he was teaching us how to be a man because he was in this world already before us. And he gave us a lot of great lessons. And, I mean, one thing about a man, keep the definition as is, he Floyd responsibility. He will stand up for his family and friends, and he's great at that. And I want you guys to know that he will stand up for any injustice everywhere. Whew. Can y'all please say his name? Thank y'all.
Floyd speaking at the ceremony today. You've been listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, also streaming live at WBAI.org. I'm your host, Jeff Simmons of Driving Forces. Paul DiRienzo is off this week, so that's why I'm just filling in with an extended version of our show today. We've been covering the pandemic. We've been covering the protests and demonstrations in the wake of the death of George Floyd. We've talked throughout the day. You've heard from a number of voices, and earlier in the show, you heard from our public advocate Jumaane Williams at a press conference. We're hoping to be able to bring you him live as well. But as I talked about the pandemic, what really has been going through my mind has been that we are about to start to reopen. In New York City, this pandemic has affected all parts of our lives, and many of the organizations that are on the front lines of supporting people who are considered the most vulnerable are also facing challenges and determining how they're going to be able to move ahead. So I asked Myung Lee, the new president and CEO of Volunteers of America Greater New York, which each year supports more than 30,000 people with housing and other life-changing services, if she could be on the show today just to talk about how the VOA is coping and what the new needs are that are emerging. So welcome to WBAI.
Yeah? Jeff?
I think we...
Yeah,
we
hi. Maybe...
Hi, Myung Lee, you can hear me?
Hello?
I think we may have the same tech issues, Reg. So what I think might work is, why don't we then convey to Mi Young that we will have her back on the show or another show? So I want to apologize to our listeners. We've had some tech issues today. Hopefully they'll be resolved soon. We can get back to normal. This is the new world we're living in. And amid the pandemic, a lot of us have been broadcasting from our homes. Engineering has had to shift to home as well, because we're doing our part at WBAI to help flatten this curve, because we want to make sure that we do all, you know, our part to end this virus that has impacted so many lives. I mean, you think about not only the devastation that this has caused in New York City and New York State, but across our country and across our world, as far as the human toll, it also has exacted a significant economic toll that I don't think we're going to recover from any day soon. I mean, it just came out earlier today. There's the weekly report. I obsess about these things. Or rather the monthly report on unemployment, but the weekly rates, as far as the number of people who've applied for unemployment, it's just astounding when you think about that more than 1.9 million people filed unemployment claims last week. And it's now estimated that, and think about this, the unemployment rate could go up to 20% in this country. Now, you say 20%, you're like, what? That basically is going to be 2 out of every 10 people that you know are going to be, could be unemployed in the near future. Consider what that impact is going to be. It's just astounding. So, you know, we're hoping to have the public advocate on, soon, but we're going to see if we can get the Mi Young Lee back on in just a moment. As we're trying to get her on, I do want to thank listeners for tuning in and for bearing with us. And, you know, you've been with us, excuse me, for 60 years. I'm hoping you could be with us for another 60. May we all live that long. We are in our fun drive. I'm not doing a heavy pitch because, you know, things just are so different right now, and it doesn't feel right to say, gimme, gimme, gimme. But at the same time, we want to be able to stay on the air. And so if you've got a moment, please give us a call at 516-620-3602 and donate. So with that, I want to try once again. We've got Mi Young Lee from Volunteers of America Greater New York back on the line. Mi Young, welcome back to WBAI.
Hi, it worked.
Thank you. It's wonderful to meet you. Thank you for your patience with us here. Reggie's terrific. He resolved the issue. So getting to the topic, why I wanted to have you on, and congratulations, you just started in the last week or so with Volunteers of America. How do you see your role at this time and the role of the organization at this time in our history?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a really challenging time to be starting a new job, never mind at a social service organization. So throughout the almost 125-year history of Volunteers of America, Greater New York, we've been serving the most vulnerable, the underserved, and the least protected members of our community. So whether we're serving, you know, every day we're serving over 3,000 people that are housed with us every night. Every year we're serving about 30,000 men, women, and children. And that doesn't change just because there's a leadership change. So our role today, given everything that we're going through, our services are needed more than ever, and we are what we do for our clients is more important than ever. We have over 1,000 essential frontline workers, and they're working with our homeless shelters, working with the domestic violence survivors, military veterans, people who are living with behavioral health issues, and homeless older adults. And they can't do it alone, and government can't do it alone. So we're the safety net that makes sure that nobody falls through the cracks. And despite the challenges that are presented by the pandemic, including the significant financial strains that we're facing on the organization, my role is to ensure that we continue to do the important work that we need to do to help our neighbors, and to ensure that we can continue to raise private dollars and everything else that we need to do to innovate and continue to grow so that we can serve our clients.
And when I've had previous guests on, they've talked with me about how their own agencies and organizations have been impacted, you know, particularly when I had someone on from the MTA, and she talked about the ranks of members who had tested positive. But from what I understand, Volunteers of America, Greater New York, has had a relatively low number of positive COVID cases among your staff and clients. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, considering the vulnerable populations that we serve, you would have expected much higher rates of COVID infections. And frankly, I can't take any credit for this work. I just got here about 2 weeks ago. But the leadership before me, Terry Pettit, who is our president and CEO, and all of the other members of our team, they really deserve every credit for doing the incredible work. As soon as Volunteers of America Greater New York realized that New York was on the verge of an unprecedented health crisis, our emergency preparedness team jumped into action and implemented the crisis protocols that we've had in place. And this plan was developed and refined over a number of past crises that we've dealt with, including the blackout in 2003, 9/11, Sandy, all of that. And this plan was put into place very quickly so that our services continued. It was never disrupted. And we have constant cleaning, disinfecting, our maintenance staff talk about essential. And this became the immediate norm. And social distancing is in place. And throughout it all, we're making sure that everyone has food and other necessities that they need to stay safe and healthy indoors.
And one of your core programs, you provide supportive housing for veterans in New York. How have those needs changed during this time?
Yeah, you know, I think what happens in times like this is that, you know, like many of our clients, the problems with our veterans, what they're living with is substance abuse and mental health issues. And all of those issues exaggerated during this time of crisis. And so what most people don't realize is that when you have these things happen, they're going through a crisis of their morality. And so we've done some work in the past called resilient strength training. And it was around the concept that Volunteers of America, Dr. Brock, who is a national expert in the national office, has been working really hard to implement across the country called moral injury. And moral injury is a phenomenon that occurs when someone has witnessed or done something or not done something that goes against their moral conscience. And it's something that it can be done to them or it can be done that you can do it. And so things like that are really debilitating. And so what we're doing is working with our clients to be aware of these issues, to raise awareness of these things that can be happening, and thinking about things like, can we take this moral injury work that we've done with our veterans, and can we then make that into something that we can transfer to different clientele, like our healthcare workers? Are they suffering from moral injury? We think so. And is there something that we can do to be supporting them in this time as well?
So, you know, we're dealing with a pandemic, and in, you know, the recent days, we've been dealing with this uprising across our city and our country, the demonstrations and protests. Mm-hmm. How do you make sense of this?
I don't think you can make sense of it. You know, the senseless killings of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, and even the threats made against Chris Cooper in New York City, and so many other instances of racism and hate remind us that the world is still full of injustice and fear of the other. And this is, it's not new, but it's being brought to the front. And the thing that makes me feel better about where I am in my work is that diversity is one of those, it's a formal shared value at Volunteers of America Greater New York. You know, we're richer and stronger because of our differences, and our work every day with our clients and the staff in the front lines is a testament to our shared values. Our clients are largely Black and brown. Our employee base, it reflects the community with which we work, and we need to just take care of folks. We need them to know that we see them, we get it, we care. We have work to do as an organization, but we are committed to working together with our frontline staff and with our board and with everyone else to make sure that we can take this opportunity and do something good with it and to really change the world for the better. And so that's the only way we can try to address it, not make sense of it.
And I've got just about a minute left, but, you know, I've often talked about how this, the effects of the pandemic in particular, are going to just resonate, ripple over years. And many of the nonprofits I normally work with during my workday, they're changing. They're looking long-term at how they're going to survive. What do you think the future is going to hold for Volunteers of America Greater New York?
You know, it's going to be different. I think everybody's going to be different. The normal is going to be different, and there's no business as usual. And so we have to address the divides in our community better. We have vulnerabilities that we have to deal with in a different way. And we have to redouble our efforts to make the places that we live better and to ensure that the most vulnerable and the most invisible, that their voices are being heard, and that we are continuing to do the work that we do every day to give hope and to give power to the people that we serve so that they can rise and overcome the challenges that they're facing. In terms of our priorities of what we do, we'll continue to fulfill the missions and take care of the most vulnerable among us. But we'll have to be thinking about how do we do what we do differently, and focus, continue to build on areas like affordable housing so that we can help in bigger ways in that area. So we have a lot of work to do and a lot less resources probably to do that with. And that's why I'm hoping your listeners will help us out if they're so inclined and able to do so by going to voa-gny.org and donating.
And thank you for doing that, because I was going to ask you where people should go if they want to get involved. So thank you. Myung Lee, thanks so much for your patience with us tonight and for appearing here on WBAI.
Thank you so much.
So we've got just about another 10, 14 minutes left for the show. Let me check to see. Reggie, do you know if we've got the public advocate by chance?
I did not receive anything yet. From the public advocate. I was supposed to receive something?
Yeah, I've sent you his number. I'm going to just send it right now for you to call. Hold on, folks. Just let me send this.
I see it. Okay.
So while you're getting him on the line, his person, Kevin's going to pick up and hand the phone over to him. I'm going to remind our listeners that we are in our fundraising drive, and I gave you the phone number before.
Yep.
But
there are other
ways you can be supportive, and that web address is give2wbai.org. It's give2wbai.org. You could also call our call center to support us, and that number is 516-620-3602, or you can text WBAI to the number 41444. Multiple ways you could show your support for WBAI at this time. Sorry, thank you. Reg, are we ready? Ah, okay. Okay, so Reggie's going to let me know when we have the public advocate on the phone, but if you were tuning in the last hour, you heard his press conference today. He has been incredibly vocal. He's been out on the streets during over the last week, part of the demonstrations. One thing that he said, and I'm going to start off by asking him this, that he said in the last 24 hours is, right now we have the wrong president, the wrong governor, and the wrong mayor. Mr. Public Advocate, thank you for joining me here again on WBAI. Can you talk a little about that quote, why you say we have the wrong president, governor, and mayor at this time?
Thanks very much. All of them are responding in very similar ways. Some of them just have bigger armies than others. I haven't really seen the rubber bullets or the tear gas to take a photo op, but I might imagine that's what's next. All of them are talking about the need to protect property and why they're sending in additional police to a police brutality protest and setting curfews. And as an elected official, we understand that we want to protect property and make folks feel safe. But we haven't seen any of that energy when it comes to addressing national concerns. None of them have said, here's our plan to make sure that Black lives do matter. Nobody has talked about that. It seems to be the afterthought. And that's a common theme. When we just got off of the pandemic, actually, they all made horrible mistakes. All three of them made errors that have cost dearly to the Black and Brown community. So if you're a Democrat or Republican, regardless of what you say, if your actions lead to the same thing, now what's the difference?
Mr. Public Advocate, how do we make sure that the death of George Floyd is not forgotten?
One, we need our leaders to step up and say, I understand you, I hear you, and here's the plan. And none of this is new. And so we have many bills and policies there right now, getting rid of 50A, giving advice and consent to the city council so they can vote on the police commissioner. There's a ton of things that we can do right now, people can say, we are going to do this. The budget is coming up. The mayor can say, we're going to, instead of cutting every single youth job that's in the city of New York, we're going to cut the budget of the police department, which is the only agency that's been left intact. We can't hire police, firefighters, we can't hire social workers, anything. But we're hiring more police. And they have a $6 billion budget. And they're the only agency, while the budget for the youth is cutting 40% for the youth division, the youth department. And all of the youth jobs are gone. The governor is cutting Medicaid right now after communities have been ravaged by coronavirus. He refuses to entertain any revenue raising options, including raising revenue for people who have luxury yachts and luxury planes. That's all we ask for. And so these are things that we can say and do. It has to be real and tangible. Because since every time this thing happens, the cry is, okay, everyone calm down, we're going to do something. And this happens over and over and over again. I applaud the city council, who right now are the leadership of Speaker Johnson, putting forth a package of bills to address some of the police abuses without accountability. Those are the kind of steps that we have to take and have to take them right now.
And I know we only have a few minutes left. You know, you've been out there on the streets. You have been among people who have been demonstrating. You know, what do you predict we're going to see in the next few days as we move ahead? Do you see that this is, we're going to continue to have still significant friction here in New York City between the NYPD and peaceful demonstrators? What do you, you know, given your insight, what do you think will happen?
I mean, I hope the response by this mayor has been the worst. He's done everything to increase friction, everything. From the first protest day, when he surrounded protesters with a massive show of force and started penning people in. The biggest concern, we don't want people in the streets. Why? Why do you not want them to let out their frustration and anger? Why do you want to pin them in? You know what's going to happen. And then this curfew was the dumbest thing in the world, both the mayor and the government. They're not even speaking or listening to the people who represent these areas, the people who are closest to the ground, who are letting you know you are making a mockery, just like you did with the pandemic. You're failing these communities again. And I hope that we don't see the clashes because people are just allowed to protest. And frankly, it's not good for anybody. There were two officers that are in serious condition right now. And I am thankful that their families will see them again. They were hit by cars. There are protesters who were hit by a police car. Protesters who I've seen banged up. The way the mayor responded is closer to Trump than anything else. And it's very, very unfortunate because they claim to be something different. So what we need to see is a release of the tension. You know, last night, the night before, I saw things that if I was told, I may not have believed it. It was just so outlandish that this would come from this mayor. This, I expect this maybe from the last administration or administration before that, but not from this mayor. And then we need to see the governor and the mayor speaking and articulating what their plan is for the righteous anger and frustration that's being expressed.
And I know we've only got about a minute or so left. How do you think people are going to look back at this moment in history?
Well, one, we're definitely on history. And we're going to see the appalling lack of leadership across this country, particularly by the federal government. And right here in the city, a failure at the city and state level, just tremendous. We're going to look back and see the decisions that were made by this government during the pandemic, by the mayor during the pandemic, cost tens of thousands of lives. And they're going to see how they handled people who were saying, we're tired of this. We're sick of living like this. And people who wanted to come out and say, yes, we're sick of seeing our fellow New Yorkers live like this. And instead of finding a solution to that problem, they made it worse.
public advocate, Jumaane Williams.
Say,
oh, no, go
I
ahead, sir.
Say, I have faith in us. So my hope is that when history looks back, they will say that those leaders failed. But the people of New York City and New York State and the country kept going. And because of that, there's a lot of change that will make.
Public advocate Jumaane Williams, thank you so much for taking the time today to call into WBAI.
Thank you.
Okay, so folks, I'm about to wrap up in about 60 seconds. I want to thank Reggie for his tireless work to try to get everything to work tonight and actually did in this last half hour. So, Reggie, thank you. I think I owe you a beer. Eventually, we'll be able to see each other once again, and I will personally buy you that beer.
I'm going to hold you to that one.
I want to thank our guests today, Myung Lee, new president and CEO of Volunteers of America, Greater New York, and New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams. And I will have controller Scott Stringer back on. Thank you so much for tuning in to Driving Forces this afternoon. Have a great day.
Can now be heard on WBAI on Thursday nights from 10 p.m. to midnight. Tune in this week, Thursday, June 4th, as your host, Peter Siegel, will present a nice mix of blues, country, folk, and bluegrass. Thursday, June 4th, 10 p.m. to midnight. Folk radio on WBAI and WBAI.org.
Hello, my name is Ralph Pointer. I am a member of the WBAI Local Station Board, the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible for local management and operations. The next meeting of the Local Station Board will be Wednesday, June 10th at 7 p.m. This meeting of the LSB to guide WBAI comes at a time when it's especially important for WBAI to be serving its listeners well, and there are, at the same time, extra challenges to ensuring the station's survival and success. Because of coronavirus precautions and restrictions on gatherings, the meeting will be a remote access meeting, which will be accessible to members of the public. It will include an opportunity for public comment. You can access this meeting by phone or by computer. By phone, if you are in the U.S., dial 929-205-6099. The meeting ID number is 922-457-2995. To join online, go to Zoom and put in that same meeting ID, 922-457-2995. It's easy to remember because it's WBAILSB995 on a phone keypad. Again, the meeting is Wednesday, June 10th at 7 p.m., and instructions for accessing the meeting, including how to submit public comments, will also be available through WBAI's main webpage. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but at the meeting we will speak about the extra financial stress the COVID crisis is causing many of our listeners and the station. If you are lucky enough to be able to help, now would be a good time.
It's Rev Yearwood with Think 100% Climate Friday. Do not miss this show. It is World Environment Day on June 5th, this Friday at 9 a.m. You can catch the show in New York on the radio at WBAI at 99.5 or in Washington, D.C. at WPFW 89.3. This week, we will have Tamika Mallory and Emerald Snipes Garner, the daughter of Eric Garner. You've been asking me about what the climate movement can do to be a part of this moment. Do not miss this show as we connect the dots between climate justice and racial justice. So tune in to Think 100% Climate Friday, 9 a.m. this week. Thank you. All power to the people.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And, excuse me. And I'm okay. I'm not dying. I'm all right. All right. The previous program was Driving Forces, which is usually heard on Thursday at 5 p.m. Stay tuned for Radio Justice Matters with Bob Ganji.